Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Hi, welcome to another edition of Speaking of Reliability. This is Adam Barrett.
And this is Fred Schankelberg. Welcome and thanks for joining us. And Adam and I were just chatting a little bit, but I'll let Adam introduce it. He gave me this vague idea about design processes and stuff like that. So I'm as anxious as you are as the listener to know what Adam's got up his sleeve here today. Adam?
Well, I'm working on a new paper, and it has to do with reliability risk and design freeze and that often contentious interaction between them. And they, it's really interesting because it's something that obviously occurs multiple points in a project. There's more than one freeze, right? You have your specification freeze.
Yeah. All right. So you're talking about freezes. The way I think of it is right, the program manager is getting antsy. We need prototypes built or we need to start shipping. So he says, all right, guys, put your pencils down. We're done. Right. And everybody steps away from their CAD program and the design is locked in. And then all these other steps can happen. Is that what you mean by a freeze?
Exactly. Okay. That's the intent, although I don't think anybody's ever seen the version that you just described actually be executed that way.
No, I actually, it was at an HP site. It was the weekly meeting, and they were coming up to their scheduled, you know, release to the contract manufacturers so they could make some prototypes. And the program manager came in, and he stood at the head of the table and says, all right, general, everybody, put your pencils down. Step away from your CAD machines. You're not allowed. Everybody go outside. You know, we are done. That's it.
We're done. Yeah, but I mean, what really happened? There were changes that happened. They were obviously all working on things, right? And so what happened when test results came back and they concluded?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, this was, you know, it wasn't the last iteration of the thing, but it was the first rounds of protos, and it was to build the first version that was going to look a lot like the final version. And of course, everybody in the room groaned and moaned and said, oh, I need 3 more hours. I need another day. I need 6 more weeks. I need, you know, we haven't settled on this feature yet, whatever. And he said, enough. The deadline's the deadline. We are done. We have to ship this stuff. You
know? Okay. So that's my point of interest, because obviously, as a team that wasn't working, you know, they all submitted to it that day, but they all were quickly, you know, figuring out how they were going to have input for the things that they thought were important. And then there were other rounds. So was it the most efficient version to have somebody come in and put their foot down like that? And when they're still now from reliability, not you're talking about designers, but from reliability perspective, right? So the decision, if you say, okay, we're done, but then a test finishes a few weeks later and it says, holy cow, we have a high risk with such and such. That's a whole different discussion, right? Because now at a high level, do you delay the schedule to mitigate the risk or do you take the risk?
Well, today we have the information we have today. And we would never finish a design if we were waiting to get perfect information, not just reliability stuff. If the decision was, this is going to be our final version, we're going to set tooling, we're going to start ramping up production and everything else, that's a deadline on the system. And it would be unprofessional of a reliability engineer to set up a test that's going to produce results 2 weeks after that. That's just irresponsible.
Wait. But yeah. you're going all binary on me here, because that's exactly why I'm writing the paper. Nobody sets up a test that intentionally is going to complete 2 weeks after a date. But how did tests go? I mean, tests are tests to failure. Well, if you knew how long a part could go until it failed, you wouldn't be doing the test, right? Like, you don't know how long it's going to go.
I'm going all binary to stress the point is that it's not just reliability, right? There's 87 moving parts to get a product out to the market or even just to get a prototype out. And The schedule is a coordinating activity that says, all right, Tuesday, we're going to push the button. We're going to save our drawings and we're going to build it. And we're going to learn stuff from that. But if the engineering teams keep coming back and saying, well, can I have until Wednesday? Can I have to this? Then we just don't get the prototypes and the whole program gets made. So I think.
But that's what I'm saying. You're going black or white. You're saying, well, there's that, a balance. Of course, you have to stop the engineers. Right? You can't leave the engineers to decide. It would go on forever. You know, if you didn't take it away from an engineer, they would design forever. So that's one extreme. And the other extreme is having a hard date that's completely not negotiable. You know, this is what happens here now, so we can stay on schedule, but missing the big picture that you're including risks that when you find them later, or, you know, whether they be released or post. So my whole interest is that resolution in between, that whole, all those gradients and shades in between. And instead of having it be informal, not planned negotiations, discussions, balancing, what if you in advance created ways to quantitatively compare the risk to the other program costs?
Well, I've done that.
So that when this occurs, which is inevitable, always occurs, you're able to have a discussion that the team's already agreed what the guidelines are.
Yeah. No, we used to do that. At least we did it with the reliability aspect of it. I sat down with the program manager, and this is a huge program, making an inkjet printer. And I sat down with him and said, now, we've got all this different activity going on. We're exploring this. We're doing halt testing. We're doing stress margining. We're doing all kinds of stuff to find problems with the and feedback to the team to improve the product. And he goes, good. I understand all that. That's great. I said, now, I know we've got a schedule, and I know you got to release stuff and everything else, but if I come back to you and say this is going to cause a 30% annual field failure rate, would you want to know that? And he goes, oh, yeah, absolutely. Anytime. Call me at night. Here's my cell number. You know, he was like, yeah, tell me. I said, now, if it's a 3% problem, do you need to know right away? And he thought about it for a minute and thought about the consequences of that in the budget and the warranty and everything else. Yeah, you better inform me of that, but you don't need to call me at night. And I said, now, if it's a 0.3% change and we have a lot of uncertainty about what the actual impact of it, he goes, no, then you keep working on that. And so we kind of set up this guideline of what was the eventual impact, financial impact to the system. And it, when it crossed a certain threshold, he definitely needed to know about it. But if it was uncertain or not above that threshold, then we said, you know, oh yeah, we learned something, it's in the record, but it doesn't need to go out on an urgent call. Is that what you're kind of talking about?
Yeah, exactly. But you did it informally. It sounds like basically in almost a hallway conversation. I'm talking about creating an actual process where you consistently do this in the programs and it's, you know, in advance. And it's a little bit, I mean, I don't know if what you described, there was more to it, but basically what you just said, it is kind of a common conversation, but it really isn't a very formal, you know, call me on my cell phone at this level, let me know the next day at this level. Let me, you know, like that's really still pretty abstract. I'm talking about taking that to creating more of a real tool kind of mechanism in the program for it, something that you actually can calculate, you know, like, so in a DFMEA, right? You assess risk based on three, you know, priority numbers, multiply it, you could sort by it, you can create cutoffs. So something similar, I started kind of making my own little equations here, and I made one to where if the number is negative, then you should go with the schedule being the higher priority. And if the number ends up being positive, it's on the reliability side, the risk is so high that you should be going that. And then of course the gradient, you know, the magnitude of the numbers compared to a previous scale. It gives you just four input.
All right. Have you ever been called an engineering nerd? What, you know, I'm, as you're describing this, and I'm thinking of, I don't remember whether it was a hallway conversation or one of our staff meetings, and we stayed afterwards, but it was informal, but it took 2 minutes and I got this guy's criteria, which he was the decision maker on the program, and trying to get a meeting to write a procedure and that all of the staff would agree to and put together. And like, we didn't have time. You know, I hear you, Adam, but is it necessary?
Yeah, here we go. Because You said numbers like 30%, 3% or whatever. Even just those numbers don't really mean enough. I mean, in all honesty, what you guys talked about really, I don't know, it really doesn't amount to much, right? To where, what does 3% mean? So a 3% failure rate can have almost minimal impact, you know, oh, again, me with cars, right?
No, but no, 3%, no. For our product, this is relative. It's relative to the product I was working on, right? And we knew from his history we had a particular failure rate, and he already worked out budget stuff. And so 3% was kind of in the range that, but if a unique new failure mechanism doubled our failure rate.
Is the severity? Yeah. Is there severity a part of it and all that? So, I mean,
because if we started anyway, a fire, we definitely.
You're kind of getting to my point that you did have more resolution to it, and you did have rankings associated to it, and you did all those things you were going to do, and you were going to invest time in defining. Yeah. It just was very informal, right?
No formulas, no process, no
but procedure. There still were going to be numbers. I'm not like doing integrations, but I mean, I'm doing like this times that is greater than this, or this times that minus that. Right. Like, I mean, you are, I bet you quite honestly, if I really followed you in everything that you did in those discussions with him throughout the whole program, what I probably could have extracted is what I'm doing. And mm-hmm. if you had done it this way, it would have been more efficient instead of having it being this kind of haphazard. I hope we have time to have these conversations. And I happen to see you at the water cooler at the right time to talk about it.
Coffee pot. So we're big coffee drinkers.
Yeah. Coffee pot. Yeah, yeah exactly. Yeah. So, I bet you that what I'm proposing actually takes less time, is more efficient, and does a better job than the amount of time you guys invested in all those. You probably had a gazillion conversations about that, because that's basically your job, is to report those measurement results to help with decisions. So it's basically your main deliverables. No?
No. I mean, we had, you know, requests and results and design changes and reviews and stuff like that. And most of that stuff was direct to the engineering teams. Directly, the program manager, unless it raised to an issue that he needed his oversight and decision making, it didn't bother him with it.
Understand for him, his level, and there's different, you know, obviously different people's attention, but
right. But the conversation about what were the triggers to take action on, and I was new to the program, I was new to HP, and I needed to know what the ground rules were, and that's kind of the intent. It was, well, you know, if this test shows that we don't know enough information, but it might raise our failure rate by one more point, and that relates to X, you know, tens of thousands of dollars of extra cost, who do I need to tell? You know, and what's the right alarm? I didn't want to become an alarmist with every little thing I imagined, you know, the stuff way deep on the FMEA. But if it was going to start a fire, right. But if it's FMEA right. is a good analogy, I think if it's a severity that's going to cause harm or light the house on fire or stuff like that, then yeah, it was pretty common sense to say, no, we need to fix this. And here's who we need to get involved. But you're talking about that gray area after you go down the top 10 list, you got to do, but you're down in that area where it's a half percent here, a little bit nudge there. And it's kind of in that realm of continuous improvement. Yeah. That was the area that, you know, if we see something or whatever, it's, do we raise that alarm or not? And you're saying, let's lay this structure out so you can calculate it.
That's where all the work is though. Yeah, all the work is there.
What I have a question though is, how do you? I mean, let's say you do an FMEA and you analyze something. And you go, you know, there's a good chance of our voltage gradients going up, that our line spacing is going to increase the possibility of electromigration or of some kind of corrosion on the circuit board. Now, if somebody asked me, well, how much more prevalent is this, or how many things will fail because of this or whatever, I says, well, it would take me 6 months ago to do a bunch of tests to analyze it and model it and all that out. But here's the general formula for this corrosion. We're violating these two things, getting less margin. It's going to increase the risk. And if I had to guess, I'd say 10%, but I could be off 50%. I really have no idea. I mean, how do you deal with that? It's because I have garbage going in as to what's the change in the risk profile. Right. And that's a real situation. I have that happen all the time where, you know, that's a risk. You need to fix that. And they say, well, what's the new failure rate going to be? And it says, well, it'll be higher than you're at now, you know, or it's going to be a problem. Well, how do I quantify that to go into the system?
Yeah, I mean, of course. I mean, with anything that's an analysis, the estimations that go into it are the estimations on the inputs, right? You have two things that create effectively confidence bounds. You have the actual assumptions and the confidence around those, right? Like you said, oh, I'm guessing blah, blah, blah versus I'm sure this. Mm-hmm. And then the other is the actual calculation itself, the confidence in the translation of something else. So, yeah, I mean, of course, the looser your assessments are, then that affects the output. But again, you have X information you're working with no matter what, and you can't get more information than you have.
Right.
The question is there a better way to have that conversation is what I'm simply saying. Is there a better way to more formally have that conversation? So the DFMEA is a good comparison, because before DFMEAs, people did talk about risk. You know, mm-hmm. they did say, hey, this really concerns me. And this thing, even though it's unlikely to happen, could cause a fire. And this thing's likely to happen, but not that big a deal. And it was somebody once said, hey, wait a minute. Let's just put a simple 1 through 10 scale on each of these three things we talk about and multiply them together, and it'll boil to the top. And we'll also get some efficiency, because in that process, we'll talk with other people, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I think in that spirit is kind of what I'm saying. This all happens. I'm not suggesting something that you don't do I'm just suggesting a more formal way to do it that will bring efficiency to it to make it less of a cumbersome task to negotiate and discuss these things.
Okay. So give me an example.
But you think that's not a good idea.
No, let's run through an example here. You know, you use the analogy of the FMEA, but I think what you're describing is different from that. So let me give you a quick scenario, and then maybe you can give me an example of how the system you're envisioning here would work, and that might clear up my, I'm just kind of shooting holes in it when I don't even know what I'm shooting at. So that might be part of the problem. But let's say I'm creating this inkjet printer, right? We have 40 or 50 engineers working on it. I'm the reliability engineer on this group and working with program managers and other section managers with their engineering teams. And we're laying out a reliability program or project that's going to take about a year. And we have different milestones for releasing early prototypes and for subsystems, and then fully functional prototypes. And eventually we're going to go into manufacturing and prove the system is up and running. And, you know, all of those steps to create a new product. And it's a version of an existing product. It's going to have some new features, and it's going to be a little less expensive, that kind of stuff. So that's the kind of scenario that I actually was in as a reliability engineer and supporting that staff with more than just testing. We did a lot of DFR and review work and all that kind of stuff. So it was, I think that's right at the start of the program. We're getting started. We're getting to know each other. And so I imagine that this, what you're outlining, would be a discussion or part of the process at that stage as we're getting started.
Yeah, that's correct. So I think the one element here that this adds, obviously you have the whole thing, you're talking about risk and projected percentile thing and likelihood of occurrence. But the one thing that DFMEA doesn't address is the program itself. And that's the component that's missing. And that's the key to the discussion you gave as an example with your project manager. Mm-hmm, so the DFMEA mm-hmm. talks about severity to the customer, likelihood of occurrence to customer, likelihood it could be detected before it happens.
Right.
The conversations you're having are about, okay, how does this affect the program schedule? The DFMEA talks, all the effects the DFMEA talks about are after release. I'm talking about the effects before release. So what's the trade-off between addressing this issue and what happens with regard to time to market and a recovery phase, and, you know, or if there's a feature that we can't release with it. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. It's the bottom line financials for the company. So in effect, the severity is to the company, whereas DFMEA, the severity is to the customer. So I'm looking to try to add some kind of a factor that measures that, because that's what's not quantitatively measured in the conversation you describe with your project manager.
Well, they're related, though. Come on.
Of course they're related, but I'm saying right now there is no column for impact to the program. The DFMEA, everything with regard to severity or occurrence, has to do with the product in the field. What about the severity to the program? The likelihood, yeah. You know, that's the likelihood this occurs and affects the program. And the program severity is in schedule time, right? It's not injury or anything like that. So, because that's really where the negotiations are around, aren't they?
Well, it doesn't have to be. In the inkjet printer, it was often scheduled because of just so many moving parts and marketing and
that's
all that
other
stuff.
That's what I mean, yep. Right, that's your severity.
But it could be cost. This is going to impact the cost of the product because the risk is that we're going to have
program.
To.
No, you're stuck on the DFMEA terms.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, cost of the program. We're going to have to spend more engineering time. We're going to have to delay the program. We're going to have to use more expensive components. We're not going to hit our numbers in the cost of development. And so schedule is very common. But feature set, there's companies that are driven by the feature sets, and it'd be risk to adding that or not adding that. And that, you know, each one of these things seems to be part of ongoing conversations. So
you think that there's no value in trying to create some kind of a structure framework so that there's consistency and efficiency to the conversations? So, you know, again, comparing to DFMEA,
So what's it look like?
Use the DFMEA as a parallel. All the things that happen in a DFMEA happen anyway. The DFMEA isn't inventing anything, right? All those conversations happen, but they happen sporadically. Some that should have happened don't happen because people don't happen to bump into each other or be at the same meeting. You know, it was very inefficient and had a lot of opportunity for things to fall through the cracks. But effectively, the base functionality of a DFMEA always happens. Everyone's like, okay, what's the biggest risk? What should we direct our resource to?
Right.
So I kind of feel like that the risk and all that associated to the program with found issues is in that same stage of informal discussion, informal, you know, negotiation, figuring out, solving. Why not put something, even though it's a very light framework, a DFMEA is a very simple thing. Why not put something that's a framework and structure like that around that risk analysis?
Okay.
I don't know. That's my
idea. That's another meeting in a group discussion kind of thing, or like an FMEA?
But all those things are happening. No, if you do a DFMEA right, it saves you time. It doesn't cost you time. See, that's where people make mistake. Now you're talking about tool misapplication. A DFMEA is a time saver if you do it right. Yeah, if you just make it another.
Yeah, no, but we get lots of pushback on adding another meeting to a schedule. So it's like an FMEA. You get the right people in the room and you organize this, understand the risk, and then now you have this working document.
You're going
document.
Too far ahead of me. This is a new idea I've been hashing out this week. Something I have all worked out. I don't know what the meetings look like.
I was ready to hire you to come in and teach us how to do this and facilitate it for us. Come on.
Yeah. Give me at least one more day, okay? This is like, but of course, you're going to have to sell it in the sense of proving that there's a good return on investment. So yes, if people are going to sit down for, let's say there's two meetings, three meetings or something, you're going to have to show it's 3 hours of meetings, but I saved you 6 hours of informal discussion. And I saved, if that includes also all the issues it mitigates, right? With when you do have issues later on that you could have made a better decision earlier. So just like DFMEA, you'd have to show that this adds value if it did. But I just see what you're hearing me express is I see this process over and over again, and I see opportunity for putting some framework and some methodology to it to increase the effectiveness of it, make sure things don't fall through cracks, and probably add efficiency. So yes, but of course the risk is you add bureaucracy and don't add value if you did it wrong.
Right. So where's this paper coming out at? You're working on a paper. Is it a blog post or?
It'll probably a conference next year or something. So.
Okay. You're going to keep us all in suspense that long, huh? You're not going to put it in your column?
I you know, I'll start writing it. And I mean, I have to do a blog post every at least once a week, so I will. I'll put it out there. I mean, to help me hash out the thoughts, right?
Yeah, but, that's what I'm thinking. Yeah,
it just seems ripe for opportunity, because it's, you know, even just talking with you now, I better formulated it, and I actually ended up feeling stronger about it when I didn't say before to myself, it really is the fact that DFME only really looks at severity, occurrence, and risk and everything for the product in the field and its performance. It doesn't in any way address before release, you know, how do you adjust risk to the program? So that's really, I think, actually, I'm glad that's why this discussion is great. It's helping me kind of shape it. But it just seems like there's an opening there for something that does go on. What if you just did it better? So that's the idea.
Okay.
And yes, I'm a nerd. Oh, I didn't answer your other question. Yes, I've been called a nerd.
Yeah, okay. I see an isograph or a slide rule type application here in the future.
Yeah. You get it. Yeah. Exactly. So yeah, that's all I had.
All right. Well, let's leave it to our listeners to see if they've got any questions for you. And the easiest thing to do is go to ascendoreliability.com /go/speakingofreliability. Oops, not speaking of reliability. It's just the abbreviation, SOR. So it's ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And there you can leave comments and ask questions and reinforce how nerdy of an idea this is for Adam, or if it's brilliant, and you can get in contact with Adam and bring him out to your organization to try this project out. I think you're going to get flooded with requests, Adam. I think this is going to hit the air and you're just going to be buried in, we got to patent this, we want it, you know.
That sounds good, because my wife is tired of hearing about these kinds of things, so I need other people to talk to about it. So
okay.
Please do reach out. She will be very grateful. she gives me that, like, you have 5 minutes to finish this before I just walk away. I'm like, okay, but it's a really good idea. What about? And you're like, So anyway, yeah.
All right. Yeah, so that would be good. All right, Adam. So hopefully you get lots of feedback. I'll think about it tomorrow. I'll probably send you a few questions and ideas. So
that's great.
I'll look forward to more on that.
All right. Take care.
All right. Thanks, Adam.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.